Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today on the show. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them. A highly decorated veteran birder, festooned, if you will, a former NCON specialist and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for a long time for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call is 800-348-2551. The lines are already loading up. Get in now while you can. 800-348-2551. You can also comment on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. And with that sigh of resignation, we welcome back Rich Guthrie. You happy to be here?
Yippee.
Well, that didn't sound very... I got to say, that didn't sound all that sincere.
But how else can I say it?
Well, you sighed when I was introducing you. Not again. So, I thought you were on every month. You're on every 2 months?
Seems like that.
I didn't realize that.
That's what it boils down to.
Wow.
Yeah. Seems like every month.
I guess there's not enough Guthrie to go around here.
Yeah, right.
Well, we'll get the show underway.
Well, here we are.
So you had a report on eBird of a rare one.
I did. Actually, there were two in lickety-split, one after the other,
yeah,
this last couple of days. And basically what it was a couple nearby noticed a different bird at their feeder in their yard.
Yeah.
And they looked it up in the book. They took down some notes. They put it on eBird,
yeah,
and correctly identified this as a bird that's really quite rare east of the Great Plains.
And what was that?
It's called the Harris's Sparrow.
Hmm.
And, you know, don't let the name doesn't do the bird justice. It's a rather noble little sparrow.
Yeah.
Bigger than most sparrows. It's very upright in its posture. It stands tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a black facial area and right on down to it, like a vest going,
oh, yeah,
right down the breast. And a bright, brightly colored pink bill.
Huh. Pink?
But anyway, yeah, pink. And but the thing is, it's really quite stately looking. But this couple knew that it was unusual. They didn't recognize it, and looked it up correctly, nailed it down.
Wow.
And then shared the information. Now, here's the story about that. We like to respect people's privacy, and it's in their backyard, so it's there. We know it's there. We're happy with that.
Yeah.
But that's where it will rest.
Did they take a picture?
Not yet. The thing is very skittish. I did go up there on invitation to go up there and have a look at it and verify, indeed, that's what it was, and tried to get some photos. And this thing was, grandiose as it was, it was very skulky.
Huh.
It stood behind the shrubbery and flitted away rapidly, brief visits and flitted away. So maybe it will become a little more comfortable and hang around a little longer and make a photo op possible.
So if there's one, will there be more than one?
Oh, no, very unlikely.
Really?
Yeah.
So why would one bird stray so far?
Well, it happens. And the chances of more than one occurring at the same time is really remote.
Yeah.
And that's one of the first suspicions that we have when somebody says, oh, I saw a real rare bird. There were six of them together. Not likely. The vagrants usually are lost individuals. They,
yeah,
travel alone, and they made a wrong turn someplace in Kansas, and here they are, either in New York or thereabouts.
So then there was another one.
Oh, yes. Now, this one is a woodpecker,
yeah,
that I think is the new neighbor on the block, the new kid on the block,
yeah,
the red-headed woodpecker, scattered variously around the state, mainly west of Syracuse,
yeah,
with the main population. And over the recent years, there's been a slight but noticeable increase in the number of reports of these things,
yeah,
around eastern New York. And here we have had one. A couple of years ago, nesting in the Albany pine bush. The other day, a fellow was just checking birds in a local area and noticed this particular woodpecker. It's quite striking.
Yeah.
Bold white patterns and the like, and very conspicuous when it's visible, but they're rather elusive in itself. But he took some pictures and shared the pictures. The word got out, and sure enough, and the local folks where this bird is are quite receptive it seems, to the birders coming and having a look at it. Yes.
So they're patient.
Because it's right out by the road. It flies across the road to the various trees on either side of the road.
So you said there was a nest of these in the pine bush?
Yes, a few years ago. Very unusual.
So they'll be more common then. If you see a nest of them, that's a family, presumably, yeah?
Right. Assuming that, and here's the story. The numbers have been increasing, and I think that is the next. We had the red-bellied woodpecker a few years ago go through the same routine where a few were sighted, then more were sighted, and now they may be the most numerous woodpecker that we have during the winter months. And now the red-headed woodpecker is right on the same path, and it seems to be following the same pattern. But time will tell.
Well, that's interesting to follow. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551 to talk to Rich Guthrie. Let's start out with our buddy Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. You're on, Kerry.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Rich, I live on a pond. It's on the Berkshire/Hampshire County line. Now, I called last year, and I was telling you how I saw an eagle, and it was being chased and harassed by an osprey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, last week I was out in my rowboat, and at a high altitude I could see a bird, which shortly later I could identify as an eagle, and it was rapidly descending, and it came down to maybe like 20 feet from the surface of the water, and right out of the sky at a very rapid pace in pursuit was an osprey.
Oh, really?
And right on its tail, okay? So like for 5 minutes, they were really going at it, and that osprey was really really harassing that eagle, okay? And then I noticed two more eagles coming in, and I guess they were trying to get into the mix of things and help their buddy. And for about 15 minutes, this osprey was complete control of the whole situation. I mean, he had those three eagles. It was like watching an aerial dogfight in World War One.
Is that a common thing?
It is common in season, I'm very curious. Are you certain that it was an osprey? And the reason I asked.
Oh yeah, I see him all the time. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, with the white under the wings and the underneath it.
Well, this is November, and ospreys really got to be out of town by now. They exit soon.
Would it be a bird that resembles an osprey?
Well,
I mean, it was huge, like one.
Here's a thought. How about a third-year immature eagle, and now they would be feisty. There would be the invitation for interaction with other eagles. Third-year bald eagle, which will, in many ways, resemble an osprey. Of course, and there are obvious differences.
Well, whatever it is, Rich, I wish he was a football player because he would definitely be with the New England Patriots.
Oh, boy.
Or the Philadelphia team.
All right, well, the Philadelphia Eagles. Right. Oh, good call. Hey, Kerry, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Ann in Scotia. Ann.
Some weeks ago, I found a dead bird in my yard.
Mm.
And I thought, I mean, it was kind of face down, and it looked, I thought it might be a pigeon,
mm-hmm.
and I really didn't want to touch it. Probably that night, some animal came along and nicely moved it off of my lawn,
mm-hmm.
but on the periphery of my yard. So every so often I would check on it, and I could see that animals got at it, and just nature took its course.
Yeah.
But one day I looked recently and found a band on
mm-hmm.
the leg,
mm-hmm.
and after a little more time passed, the leg had gotten small enough that without touching, I could get the band off.
Okay.
So I have the band.
Yes.
And apparently, it could be from somebody who has like racing birds, pigeons.
Yes. Right.
Do you have a phone number or any way? The number on it's a gray band,
mm-hmm.
and it says AM, and then 14, and then a 7.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right about it's probably a racing pigeon that got off the track and didn't make it, and that happens for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
The band that you have is indicates that it is probably belonged to a fellow who was a member of a racing pigeon club, And there is a website where you can go and enter that. It's not a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service band, the U.S. government-sponsored research program. This is a private club that Racing Pigeon Fanciers belong to, and they use those bands to identify their individual birds. And I don't have the website handy at the moment, but there is one that you can go online and plug that number in and find out where that bird may have come from.
Well, I don't have a computer.
Oh, so okay.
That kind of leaves that out. But I just thought I'd give it a try.
Well, you're right about that, though. And unfortunately, and these people that have racing pigeons are quite serious about their hobby.
I bet.
Yeah.
And the hard facts are that if the bird doesn't make it back, it's not a qualifier. And they really don't much... Well, I don't say they don't care, but they've lost interest in that particular bird. It's not breeding stock.
All right, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. This whole thing about racing pigeons interests me. I'll have to find out more in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available, skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting William Joyce, Guardian of Childhood, an exhibition of Joyce's original illustrations for his books and films, and monthly programs highlighting his work, arkellmuseum.org. Colby Attorneys Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishings for the legal and professional community since 1939, ColbyService.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, HenyonBakery.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 800-348-2551. So, Rich, tell me about racing pigeons. Now, I picture you line the pigeons up, you have a starter pistol, and then they all just fly away. How does this actually work?
Actually, it's close, but not quite. Here's the story. Now, the people engaged in this hobby are quite serious about it.
Yeah.
And their birds are prize birds.
Okay.
There is a competitive nature to it. Now, what they do is they'll box up these birds in little coops.
Okay.
Put them on the back of a truck.
Yeah.
And drive them someplace, you know, from Poughkeepsie to Ohio.
All right.
And then the fellow who's in charge of it will open up each of those coops and let the birds fly around. And they will. They'll circle a few times until they all gather up into a tight flock. And then the race is on. And meanwhile, all of this is while the clock is ticking.
Okay.
So these guys will beat wings back to Poughkeepsie.
You're kidding me.
Oh, seriously.
So they'll go, you'll set them loose in Ohio, and then they head back to Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, Ohio or Schoharie County or eastern Massachusetts, one of those places. And they will navigate because they have a very strong homing instinct.
Yeah.
They're homing pigeons. And like most birds, do have a good sense of direction and homing. And then when they get back, it's quite elaborate. When they get back, they'll trigger a little perch that will give them a time-date stamp arrival. And then they go through these calculations, you know, my coops are over here, your coops are over there, the time and distance is this. And they calculate it, and they say, we have a winner.
You're kidding me.
Right.
Now, I haven't seen this on DraftKings. Is this something you can gamble on?
Well, not in New York.
Okay, no, I'm kidding. Right. Of course I'm kidding. Mr. Schneiderman, I'm only joking, sir. No, I wouldn't do that.
But you know, every now and then you'll see one of these tight flocks of pigeons go winging by. They're bent on getting to where they're going, a straight line, and that
is amazing.
Yeah, you'll see 20 or 30 birds all in a tight cluster, and they're going back to where they belong.
And your bird people are all right with this?
Oh yeah,
it's okay. It's not harming the birds.
Those birds are. You know, these are like beagles in a pond or in a park. You know, they're happy. They're this is what they're doing.
Beagles in a pond is another thing.
Yeah, right. Well,
that's another horrible situation. Let's go back to the phones. John and Clinton. John, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is because I have a friend of mine who's no longer wants to keep his cockatiel, and he wants to give it to me. And I found a great deal on a cage and everything, but I was just wondering if I'd get some more information about what their habitat requirements are, their nutrition requirements, things like that, so that I can take good care of it.
Well, good idea. Cockatiels are a type of parrot. Very intelligent birds, very devoted. If you get on the right side of them, if not, well, be prepared. They have a way of nipping and reminding you that who's in charge here.
Oh, I see.
But on the other hand, when you got them loving you, they are the cutest, darndest little guys, and very intelligent. They will do. You know, they're very capable. Now. And they're quite simple to maintain, a clean environment with healthy food. Any of the pet shops or wild bird food outlets will give you good advice on the type of seed and vegetables and water and cages that would be good for them. A cockatiel is a bird, I would not let it ever go out the window, out the door, outside.
Right.
Always keep it intact.
Should they eat vegetables too, besides like regular bird seed?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Oh.
Lettuce, green vegetables.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, fruit. And, you know, I don't want to encourage this, but I've known of cockatiels and other parrot types that will be happy with table scraps.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Come on. Really?
No, they're in the wild. They will eat whatever they can find, from vegetables to meat products.
So omnivores.
Omnivores.
Oh, amazing.
Okay. Opportunists.
Okay, cool.
And I like cockatiels. I remember one time, a short story, I'll make it shorter.
Sure.
I found a cockatiel that had gotten lost, and it was actually trying to get into a car window because it identified with people. I picked it up on a cold, rainy day, much like today, and put it in my jacket and brought it back with me. And I gave it, after I got back and took care of it, it was a really nice little guy.
Yeah.
I was sorry to have to not keep it, but anyway.
Did you find the rightful owner?
I did. Oh, I did.
You check the VIN number? How do you do that?
No. I there was no way of finding where it came from.
There was no
identifying bands on it. I did look, and it was in a neighborhood where out of town. It was down by New York City. But Go ahead.
is there any particular temperature that is best for them in the house?
Room temperature. Household temperature. It's not cold, not
just
hot.
Just regular?
Yes.
68 to 72.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Arctic or tropical.
Right.
Just comfortable, shirt sleeve temperature for you.
John, thanks a lot for the call. This one came in via email from our friend Polly, who says, "Good afternoon, Richard Ray. I was driving to work one morning recently and thought I saw a bald eagle flying over the fields immediately south of Accord on 209. Is this possible?"
Yes.
Okay.
Eagles are one of our really nice success stories in the comeback that we've managed to bring the eagles back to the Northeast, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey. So, and they do get around.
Yeah.
They go from Accord. Let me see. Now, I would suspect that that bird might have been commuting between the Hudson River and the Ashokan Reservoir in the Catskill Mountains, which is what they do. They go from place to place, and surely there's a good chance that was an eagle.
All right. Let's go to Tim in Boston Spa. Tim, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Yes. Do orioles reuse their nest year after year?
Nope. They build a new nest, and now is a time where you can see the nests that were concealed by the foliage on the trees. And what an elaborate nest that is. If you ever have a chance to take a close look at the way...
I unfortunately had that chance. There's a big weeping willow over my pond.
Which is what they like, yep.
An oriole nest in it for years.
Yep.
Now, I couldn't swear that that's the only one, but as willow trees will do, it's now lying on the ground.
Ow.
And I was able to retrieve the nest.
Yep.
And we've always had orioles around. But, yep. That's the only nest. What do they make it out of? Is it spider webs or cattails?
Strings of grasses and actually they'll use such things as a horse hair and people will put out fiber, cotton, or the like, and for them to weave into the nest. But they're really, you know, this the nest building is part of their courtship ritual. It's a bonding endeavor. And it's actually all done by the female, incidentally. Very intricate, elaborate work that goes into it, woven into a tight basket that can withstand the weather elements right through the winter. But no, they will not reuse it. Another bird might pick up on it, but not the orioles.
Yeah, it looked like it was probably milkweed or maybe cattail.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Tim. We appreciate the call. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Fred in Wineskill. Fred, you're on.
Hi, guys. Hey, I was over and I happened to be lucky enough to go over to Rome last week, and one of the most wonderful sights that I saw were these parrots flying around that city. And I watched them for a while. They were high up in the trees around sunset. I saw a parrot earlier during the day, and later, 5 days later, they're flying around up in these trees. It was so cool to see these, you know, birds that we usually see in cages.
Right.
Flying wild. There was about six of them, and they were just screeching and flying all over the place, and they were also messing around with the crows, the version of the crows that were over there, and it was a really fun thing to watch.
Well,
just
I presume...
a comment, but
you go ahead.
I do have a question, though, that's totally different, but it was really fun to see. They were kind of green, yellow belly, maybe green. And they looked like they had some red cheeks. They were about 2 feet wingspan and about maybe 2 feet long. It was pretty neat.
All right, Fred. Rich has got the Sibley bird book out now, and he's going to look
this
up.
I'm just going to thumb through this here and see what we can come up with. But I presume you're talking about Rome, Italy, not Rome, New York.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
They're out by the bocce ball world championship in Rome, New York. Yeah. No, I don't think
so. And it was really fun to watch them because it looked like they were messing with the crows, you know, because and they were like playing with them or doing something with them. Yeah. Territory. I don't know what it was. It wasn't aggressive, but they were goofing around with them.
Goofing around. It was really fun
to watch.
Leave it to the parrots to do that. Here's the story. They're not native to either Rome, New York, nor Rome, Italy.
okay.
But those are probably the offspring of some escape birds. Remember we talked about don't let the cockatiel get out? Well, somebody let those parrots out.
Well, they seem to be doing well, though.
They do. They're quite adaptable. Many of the species are. And, in fact, in some areas, they can become numerous. South Florida or Los Angeles area, there are several different types of escaped parrots that are thriving in viable populations. Here in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, we have what's known as the monk parakeet. That has escaped from captivity, has found suitable mates, and have established a viable nesting, permanent resident population. So that they would be toying around with, harassing the crow species of Rome, it's not unusual. I think it's one of the endearing features of the parrot family is that they are playful, they are intelligent, and they will try something different every now and then.
Hmm. You had a question, Fred?
Yeah, the question was of the birds, the different birds that you're seeing coming into the area and perhaps birds you're seeing disappearing from the area, is there anything you could say about, not say, but does it make you think about that the area is getting warmer as far as climate or anything like that?
Well, there are some changes going on, very noticeable changes. We were talking about the incursion of the red-headed woodpecker to the area. That's probably not anything to do with climate. But we do have a lot of southern bird species that are now here. The cardinal, the mockingbird, the Carolina wren, the list goes on. And the causes for that? Range expansion. It could be coincidental that 30 some odd species decided they were going to expand their range northward. But coincidence in nature, not an easy sell.
Okay.
But there is not strong evidence of a decline of northern birds retreating northward.
Okay.
They seem to be holding fast.
So, I mean, you've been following this a long time, and birds will sort of change their areas at times over the decades,
yeah.
Right?
Some come and go like the tides. The evening grosbeak was one of those, several decades ago, many years ago, they were absent in the area. Then there suddenly was a surge of evening grosbeaks, beautiful gold and black and white, striking big, large birds that came into the area. They were here in hordes. And then, after a few years, even after having settled down and nested in the area, they just withdrew.
Huh.
And now an evening grosbeak outside of the Adirondacks or the Green Mountains is quite unusual. It could happen again, these incursions, these comings and goings. And other ones have moved in and are here. They're staying.
And that's what's
continuing.
One of the great things about eBird is you're able to track these things a little more easily.
Absolutely, yep.
Now let's go to Bruce in Jefferson. Bruce, you're on.
Yes, my neighbor and I are in a debate over blue jays. And as you know, blue jays will come to your feeder and they'll devour everything in it. And he claims that they store everything in their cheeks like a chipmunk, and they go out in the woods and hide it somewhere. And I can't disbelieve that, because I don't think a bird could eat that much in one sitting. So what do blue jays do after they clean your feeder out?
Is there a wager hinging on this, a beer of coffee?
If I don't win this argument, he doesn't know this, that I'll make a wager, so I might be able to...
Oh, that's nice.
You want some inside information.
Oh, fine. All
okay,
right.
Go with his theory.
Go with his theory?
Yes.
It's true?
Yeah, they stash stuff. So that's
okay, now where do they stash it? In trees, or do they find it later, or do they just lose it and someone else eats it?
Yeah, they lose it. And somebody else will help themselves to it. That's why you find some little birds will follow around where larger birds are stashing food. And the nuthatch is good for that, and the titmice. They'll go around and poking and prodding into secret hiding places, and sometimes they get lucky, so they keep trying.
I'll be darned.
So
okay.
I think you're on good ground. Yeah, they stow food, try to word the wager around that.
Okay, so I'm going to lose, though, because
yeah.
He claims it. I claim they know.
So just forget all about it then, Bruce.
Yeah, right. Or reword it somehow. Turn him around and have him convinced the other way.
Yeah, I'm gonna win this beer bet when I make it.
Yeah,
now,
okay.
I want to tell you about the red-headed woodpeckers, the ones with the solid, solid red heads. And
yes.
We see them a couple times a year up here, up on top of our mountain. And you definitely know them. You definitely see them. You definitely notice them.
Unmistakable.
At first they were the red-bellied woodpecker. But so we do have them up here. Now, is that rare in this area in Jefferson, New York?
It is rare, but becoming less so.
Okay.
And that's the first I've heard of them in Jefferson area. That's over in Delaware County, right? New York?
Jefferson, Schoharie, right in the Delaware border.
Right.
But we've seen them probably for the last 3-4 years on and off. And it's something that you absolutely notice, you take note of.
Yeah.
And then they're gone for, we might have seen them twice, 3 times this year.
Well, I think you're onto something there. And I would encourage you, if you're not familiar with eBird, as Ray just mentioned, hop on and type a few notations in on eBird.org. E-B-I-R-D.
Okay, rather than hopping on, I'd rather fly to your website.
Okay. We can do that. I'll give that
go
info
ahead,
out.
Give it out right now.
Okay. The blog is at thetimesunion.com. theblog.timesunion.com/birding, and you can tag it in there. I'll pick up on it, and we'll make a story out of it.
Okay, so timesunion.com.
Go there, and then go to the blogs and look for birding.
That's the easiest way.
Yeah, just go follow the buttons.
All right, Bruce. Good luck, my friend.
Yeah,
and
Bruce.
Appreciate
good job.
The call, and over to Mary in Grahamsville, New York. Is that Mary?
Grahamsville.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, you're on.
Another mountain village.
I have all kinds of flowers all summer, and a lot of the wildflowers, like the goldenrod and the asters and the monarda. Now, should I cut them down, or should I leave? Because they all have seeds. Every time I walk by, I still see seeds there. Now, are the birds going to eat them?
Yep.
So yep. I should leave them?
Yeah, leave them there. They have seeds on them. I, I do the same thing. After they've been expended, then, you know, then you can take them out as deadheads. But in the meantime, sure, leave them there. The goldfinches and the chickadees and the siskins, if they should come around. It looks like we're in for a big siskin year. Pine siskins
really
are just staging up north. I was up on the shore of Lake Ontario, and I watched thousands of them flying overhead, wave after wave.
More than usual?
Oh, yeah, way more.
Why do you think that is?
Usually it's all about food.
Yeah.
And they're on the hunt for more food. And so I have to assume, and I can find out, but there's a seed crop failure further north, and we have an abundance of food here, and they're coming to get it. So, yeah, leave the seed heads up there until they're gone, and then you can tidy them up.
Okay. Now, what about the berries? I have a lot of, bushes with berries.
Mm-hmm. Same thing.
They're going to eat them.
Yes. And what happens with that? With some berries will last through the latter part of the winter. And after the first, all the other berries are gone by then. These are rather unpalatable. I'm thinking of winterberry and also
crab
apple.
Yeah, that's what I have. I have winterberry.
Okay.
Yeah. And hollyberry.
Yep, same thing. And as spring approaches, you get the freeze and thaw cycle of later spring.
Yeah.
The berries soften up, and they actually chemically change so that they become not only more nutritious but also sweeter. The birds love it. So keep them there.
The things you know, Rich Guthrie. Let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll be back with the home stretch on The Birding Show.
Support for WMT comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn sessions, resume, and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. Wendy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture and chiropractic therapy. Comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998. WendyHollowVet.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org. And Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, AmherstCopy.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is here. We talk birds every once in a while. Number to call is 800-348-2551. And let's go to Kathy in Albany. Kathy.
Hi.
Hi there. We have a wonderful variety of birds that come to our backyard here in the city of Albany. And we had one show up recently. It looks just like a red-breasted nuthatch, but the nape of the neck is white. Instead of just coming from the eye back down, I'm looking at the picture in the Peterson book right now, and there's no black on the head and the nape of the neck. It's just white. So it's not some other kind of bird, I think. Maybe just a different coloration, aberration or something.
Well, good for you for noticing that little difference. And sometimes those subtle differences will make will have a lot of meaning to it, but not here. Every now and then you'll get one of these little aberrations. Just yesterday I was watching a white-throated sparrow that had a white collar around its neck.
Yeah.
There is such a thing as a white-collared sparrow. This was not one of them. The likelihood is it's your not everyday red-breasted nuthatch, but red-breasted nuthatch.
Okay.
That's what I figured. Okay, thanks.
Okay,
thanks,
thank you.
This one came in via email from Joe. I watched a blue jay hide an acorn in my yard last week. He poked it into the care spot of lawn, then covered it over with an oak leaf before he saw me watching and flew off. How about that? I think that's a bare spot of lawn.
Okay.
A care spot of lawn doesn't make any
sense. And if he doesn't come back, you may have an oak tree in your yard.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nature. All right, James in Highland. James, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you, Rich?
Good.
Are there any woodpeckers that are indigenous to this area and to the Hudson Valley? and the lower parts of the Hudson Valley, like around the Poughkeepsie area, Island Falls, West Point.
Yes. Probably there are a good six or seven species of woodpecker that occur in this region. From the downy woodpecker to the hairy woodpecker, the pileated, the red-headed, red-bellied, the sapsucker, which is a type of woodpecker, the flicker, another type of woodpecker, and then a couple of vagrants that may show up. I remember years and years ago, there was a Lewis's woodpecker down your neck of the woods, which was met by a bunch of skepticism because the lady who had it in the yard did not have a camera, did not get a picture, but described it as unmistakable, Lewis's woodpecker. And anyway, so yes, there are quite a variety.
Well, because I know that you had mentioned the red-headed woodpecker a few times, and, you know, they're more prevalent out in the western part of the state.
Right.
But I have one that is hanging out in my backyard. I was actually, I live in a somewhat wooded area. I've seen him a couple of times a year, like maybe for the past 2 or 3 years.
Okay. Well,
and he's actually, he's pretty docile. He lets me walk up to him, and he's sitting there, and he's a relatively large fella. And, you know, he's peeling away at the bark looking for, you know, bugs or what have you. And, you know, then he gets bored of what he's doing and takes off in a different direction.
Well, here's the thing. If you could get a picture of a red-headed woodpecker down in your area, wood bees is still unusual, although they do occur. And usually when there's one, there's likely more than one in the neighborhood. So see if you can get a picture. And once again, you can share it, if you like, on eBird, eBird.org. That's Cornell University, a National Audubon Society, sponsored interactive website. Or you can send it to me on the blog.
So
in the
blog
at timesunion.com/birding.
Okay.
How big do they normally get?
Let me see. I'll look at it and I'll tell you right here. It says 9.5 inches.
9.5 inches?
Yep.
Oh, boy. Well, the one I've seen probably was a little bit bigger than that.
Okay.
Perhaps it was not that.
It could have been perhaps a pileated woodpecker, which has that red head. But they're a little skittish, but it's very possible that's what you had there instead. They have a conspicuous red head. They're quite large.
Oh, yeah.
They're the size of a crow.
They are.
And a lot of black on it with, you know, big patches of white when it flies.
They're pretty common, right?
They're fairly common, yeah. And they would definitely be a likely bird down your area.
Well, I'm gonna try to get some pictures next time I see him and make some comparisons here.
Okay.
But I'm 99.9% sure that's what I've been looking at.
Okay, well, you're on a mission
very
now.
Very unusual. Okay. I am.
James, thanks for the call.
Oh, looking forward to it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Over to Fred and Hurley. Fred.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question, an anomaly, and a comment.
Can you go off speakerphone, Fred?
I did. I thought I did. Sorry.
Oh, here we are. Okay.
Okay. Question, anomaly, and comment. The comment is quick. Ashokan Reservoir, bald eagles. As far as the question is concerned, I'm up on the southeast palisade of Catskill Park in Hurley, and so up in the woods. The nuthatches are incredibly abundant this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen brownies in my area for about 6-7 years. I've got about 80 birds that come through my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen brownies for a good number of years now, and I'm wondering what may be going on with that.
Okay.
And then the anomalies I'll save for a second.
Okay. I presume what you mean is brown creeper. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean they're the relative of the nuthatch.
Close relative, yeah. They mouse, a brown mouse-like bird that creeps up the side of the tree. That's very difficult to see because they're so small, cryptically colored, and they tend to spend half the time around the other side of the tree that you're looking at. The other half on the side you're looking at, but you can't see them because they blend in with the bark.
But we used to see them, you know, quite often.
I bet.
I haven't seen them in years.
Really? Well, I don't have a ready answer as to where they, what might have be the story behind that. They have for a tiny little bird that they are, they have a remarkably loud song, and a terrific song that they start singing about April right in through May into June. But they also migrate out of the area. So most of them are gone by now. If there are any around, you may have them. They do like suet. If you have suet feeder or peanut butter, if you could spread some peanut butter on the bark of the tree, they will find that and they'll be back.
Interesting.
But I don't have a ready answer as to what might be going on with the local population. I don't think that the species is undergoing any kind of trauma. So all I can say is keep track. And an eBird, like Ray said, I think I might have mentioned it.
eBird.org, right?
Yes. Is a good way to keep track of these local fluctuations in populations.
Okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
The anomaly is similar to the previous woman's situation with strange mottling. I've got what I believe is a chickadee. And, of course, it sort of looks like... The goldfinches, because they've changed their colors now. So I can't quite tell, but it doesn't have the black stripe on the head. It has, like, black and white mottling.
Okay. Well, that happens in most bird species. And, you know, the more abundant the bird species, the more often you might see something like this come up with robins or blackbirds and chickadees and the like. So
I've seen that with robins, but I've never seen it with a chickadee before.
Well, it's aberration that is an individual difference in the from the normal, but you know, not with the millions of them that are out there. Every now and then, you're going to have this little difference show up, and that's how, you know, perhaps over time it will have it as an ecological advantage. And
I catch it and
no, don't do that. No.
that would serve nobody any good.
Fred, thank you very much for the call. Over to Suzanne in Dutchess County. You're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi, I just about the birds hiding the food. I'm prompted to say about the crows. I think I read a story, or there's a children's story, or anyway, and the crows hide their food, but they're a step ahead. They will sometimes watch to see if there are other crows watching them. Then they fake it, like in your garden, and they appear to be burying an acorn or, you know, and then they fly off and they bury it somewhere else. And then another crow will fly right down to see if it is there in the spot where the other one buried it. And I mean, like, they're really got this whole social thing about the food, hiding places. And
deceptive little guys.
Must be a catchy song.
Yes.
Yeah, they're incredibly smart. And I guess it's well known that they move it. Sometimes they'll even bury it and move it to another place. I thought only crazy squirrels did that. But that was the only thing.
Well, it does make a good story. And sure, they will do that. They will not trust their neighbor. They're not into sharing so much. And other ones are into helping themselves, you know, snagging what they can for an easy meal. So I think anything along those lines is possible. If a bird sees, you know, I've watched this where birds will fake entering a nest when they're really not.
To what end?
To make you go to that nest so that you won't be bothering their babies.
Oh.
And I'll tell you who does this. The wrens do that. They actually build a decoy nest and tend to that, go back and forth to that, and have you believe that that's where the babies are while the mate is over there actually feeding the little guys.
Amazing. Andy in Bloomingburg. Andy, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Good afternoon. This past Easter, we had a pileated woodpecker excavating in a very large cottonwood tree. It was probably 50 feet off the ground, but we were able to watch him with a spotting scope. But he did it for about 2 weeks. He would go inside and then throw parcels, big chunks out, and then suddenly he stopped, and then a smaller woodpecker came and set up housekeeping in it.
Okay.
Is this unusual? Do they nest in holes or in a nest?
Well, no, they build a hole. They will dig a hole in a tree and use that hole as a nest site. And it could have been just wishful thinking. The fellow was out there trying to build a nest, establish a territory, and no mate would have it. So he just moved on.
Oh, OK. Okay.
Yeah. And then the other one said, vacancy, I'm in.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks a lot. Let's go over to Donald in Arkville. Donald, you're on.
Hello, this is Don Mello from Arkville.
Hello, Don.
Hi. About a week ago, about 2 weeks ago now, I was up on my road, a dirt road, and I saw this bird walking up the road. And it was very easy to identify because it was all white.
Mm-hmm.
It was an Arctic gull with black eyes and black legs, so there was no other gull that resembles it.
Right.
And apparently, it's a Canadian bird. But I've been up here 40 years. It's the first time I ever seen one, so I wondered if you could give me any information.
Well, did you get a picture?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
It stayed around about 30 seconds walking up. I have a little pond on the property.
Right.
But then, like I said, it took off, and I've never seen it since.
Well,
have you heard anything like this?
Yes, as a matter of fact. And now, first off, there are all-white gulls that do live in the Arctic, and they usually don't leave the Arctic, even in the worst of winters. They'll spend the winter, with minus 40 Fahrenheit centigrade.
Wow.
Out at on the ice pack.
Sounds like the Western Catskills.
Nice.
Yeah, you may be onto something there. So much for global warming, eh?
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, but these guys do tend to wander. Now, just a few years ago, now I'm thinking there's a number of different kinds of all-white gulls that are found from the Arctic.
Not with black eyes and black legs.
Well, yeah. Okay. But in any event, the ivory gull, which is a beautiful white gull, one time not too long ago, well, now it's a little longer ago, was at a bird feeder in Saratoga Springs, New York, lady was feeding it minced clams.
Huh.
Excuse me, but that's exactly what I thought it was at first, an ivory gull.
Yeah, well.
But then I saw the legs and eyes were different. You know?
Wow, okay.
So what can I say? You probably saw something that was really, truly unusual in New York State or New England, there it was. I can't speak for it because you saw it, and I don't doubt what you're saying, but I will tell you that it would have been extremely unusual for that to be the case.
Right. It was fairly close. I'm talking about like 300 feet, so when I took the binoculars out and stayed like maybe 2 minutes, so I got to look at it the whole time. I wrote everything down about it, and matched the gull to a T, in my bird book. So I was wondering. But then I did read that once in a while it does go below the United States border. But I'm thinking this is pretty far down.
You're right about that. This is really out of range for them. Tell you what, recopy your notes and do send, if you can get on to eBird, let's share it. It probably won't go anywhere, but, that's a kind of documentation that may represent a trend that's just beginning. You may be the first.
Right. Well, Donald, we got
to
move.
If I happen to see it, I'll give you another call.
Thank you.
We got to move along here, but thanks very much. Let's go over to Valerie in Queensbury. Valerie, you have about 30 seconds here.
Hey, I was just wondering what sorts of feeds and seeds I should put out to attract the widest variety of birds.
Easy pickings. Don't buy the bag that you get in the supermarket. That's probably, that one on the shelf, that 5-pound bag. Don't get that. Go to a feed store. Pick up a wild bird mixture also use black oil sunflower seed,
okay,
thistle seed, suet, and crack corn. And any of that mixture, the crack corn on the ground, the suet in a little cage on the side of the feeder, thistle in a sock that holds it, and you should then be able to attract the biggest, widest variety.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey, welcome. Valerie, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks to everybody who called in. That was a busy show today, Rich?
I loved every minute.
Well, you had all these great gift ideas.
Oh,
we didn't even get to them, so you have 10 seconds. Go.
Okay, 10 seconds. Membership, subscription, share for the person in your life. A membership or a subscription to a magazine, membership in a land use organization such as Nature Conservancy or the local land trust. These things will benefit both the giver, the recipient, and the birds.
Thank you, Rich Guthrie. Support comes from Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Pine Bush Perspectives, a juried photo exhibit featuring photographs of the natural environment taken by visitors, albanypinebush.org. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, holiday gift sets in stock now, grapesandgrainswine.com. And Maybe Farm Historic Site, an 18th century farm on the banks of Mohawk River, featuring interactive food exhibit, Instagram photo exhibit, talks, nature trails, and events for children and adults, accepting reservations for basket weaving workshops, SchenectadyHistorical.org. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Zach at the controls, Barb at the phones. The news is next.